today on Straight Talk Africa, new fears and more concerns regarding the Ebola epidemic in West Africa. Just days after the World Health Organization announced it was over, new cases and 3 deaths in Liberia. Included among our guests today is a co-discoverer of the virus. That's coming up next right here on Straight Talk Africa. Hello, welcome to Straight Talk Africa, live from the Voice of America studios here in Washington. It's Wednesday, December 2nd. I am Shaka Sali.
Well, happy Wednesday, Shaka, and hello to you, and hello to all our viewers and listeners on the continent and elsewhere. I'm Mariama Diallo, your social media reporter.
Today, we'll talk about efforts by Africans and the global community to rebuild West African countries affected by the Ebola virus.
And coming up later in our STA inbox, we'll share your thoughts on this topic through your emails, tweets, and Facebook comments. Hope you'll stay with us.
And thanks, Mariama. But first, a panel of experts says major reforms of the global health system are needed if the world is to avoid a repeat of the Ebola epidemic that swept across West Africa last year. My colleague, Helena Ridgewell, has more from London.
More than 11,000 people died as the Ebola virus spread across Liberia, Guinea and Sierra Leone, with minor outbreaks in a handful of other African countries. The investigation into the global response describes immense human suffering, fear and chaos, and criticizes lack of political leadership. Professor Peter Piot was part of the team that discovered the Ebola virus in what was then Zaire in 1976. He chaired the report into the latest outbreak.
We need to support those countries that are the most vulnerable to epidemics to build their capacity so that they can diagnose locally and promptly and also organize the response through health education and whatever measures have to be put in place.
The report says the biggest single failure was the World Health Organization's delay in sounding the alarm about the outbreak.
We were simply far too slow to respond to this Ebola crisis. And as a result, many people died unnecessarily that could have been prevented. That means a better equipped, a more efficient, and more responsive WHO, World Health Organization, and also a system that brings a more accountability.
Since the outbreak, promising vaccines have been developed against Ebola. Piot says thousands of lives could have been saved with earlier investment.
We need a better system to develop new vaccines, new drugs, new diagnostics, where there is no market incentive.
Last month, the 3 worst affected countries celebrated the first week. None of them experienced any new infections. But in recent days, there have been several new cases in Liberia.
We've discovered now, which is something we didn't know, that people, men, can excrete the virus in their seminal fluid for 6-7 months, that there may be persistence of the virus in the body, and so all that is very new.
Piot says those new developments make the need for reforms even more urgent to prevent a future pandemic. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
Thanks, Henry, for that interesting report. Now, joining us here in the Washington studios are 3 distinguished guests. The man himself, Dr. Malonga Miatudila, a public health specialist who knows Ebola very well. In 1976, he was part of an international team that first identified the virus in Yambuku, Zaire, now the Democratic Republic of Congo. Dr. Linda Mobula, assistant professor in the Division of General Internal Medicine at Johns Hopkins School of Medicine. In July 2014, she was deployed to Liberia by Samaritan's Purse, a faith-based relief organization. And last but not least, Dr. Ashish Jiha, associate professor of health policy and management at the Harvard School of Public Health. He is the co-chair of the independent panel, along with the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine, on the global response to Ebola epidemic that convened last month and called for major reforms. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I have to say I'm profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host you on Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
You're most welcome. Later in the program, we'll give you, the audience, a chance to call and talk with our guests. The number to call is 202-619-3111. Your country code is 1. Let me come to you immediately, Dr. Mia Tudla. You listened to the package. You obviously saw your friend, your former colleague, Peter Piot. Do you agree? Yeah, do you agree with the report?
I agree. I agree with my friend, Dr. Piot. But I should add something based on what I always tell my colleagues, that the best physician for somebody is that individual himself. What do I mean by that is that maybe we should also start blaming ourselves, blaming our countries, blaming our communities, because they were those who were supposed to be in charge of controlling Ebola when it started. WHO, of course, has the role to support countries and communities, but the first blame should be placed on ourselves.
Very interesting. What about you, Dr. Mobula?
I think one of the reasons why this outbreak was extremely difficult to control is that we had very weak and fragile health systems. With fragile health systems, it's very difficult to be able to detect and rapidly respond to a case. I think we lost a lot of healthcare workers because they didn't know what Ebola was. And as patients presented to health facilities, they were diagnosed as having malaria, and there was direct contact with patients.
Mm-hmm.
I think with this many deaths, it's very difficult to blame one entity. I think it's difficult to place the blame on just WHO. I think we have to look at things globally. It's true the alarm was sounded very late. However, I think we need to look at other factors, specifically weak health systems. I think that's one of the major reasons why this outbreak was very difficult to control.
Very interesting. What about you, Dr. Jiha? After all, you own the report.
So Dr. Piot was a chair of our panel I was co-chair on, and I agree with my colleague that this really was a failure at all levels. There were failures that happened at the country level. These three countries that were most affected had weak health systems, had weak systems for surveillance, weak systems for public health. The regional entities did not, the regional office of WHO did not perform as it was supposed to. And Geneva, WHO in Geneva did not perform as it was supposed to. Mm. I think there is plenty to blame, of blame to go around. To me, the big tragedy here is that this could have been prevented. And 11,000 people lost their lives unnecessarily. And so the biggest disservice we can do to them is if we don't learn our lessons and do better next time.
Now, of course, I realize that you are blaming the WHO, but is it Geneva, or are we perhaps to blame Brazzaville, where the regional office for WHO is based, actually?
So I do think there is plenty of blame to go around. There is no doubt that the way regional leadership has been chosen around various offices of WHO, not just in the African region, but in other places, is problematic. I do think the country office representatives of WHO, that also didn't work as it was supposed to. At the end of the day, the accountability has to lie with Geneva, and that is my personal feeling, is that somebody has to be held accountable. The leadership of WHO isn't the only entity that needs to be held accountable, but they have to be one of the key entities that has to be held accountable. And this is not to cast blame, but this is to say, what do we need to do better next time? And that includes focusing on individual countries. It certainly focuses on a regional response that goes beyond WHO. And I think you're seeing the African Union taking a bigger role. Mm-hmm. You're hearing talk about an African CDC. But we also need reforms at WHO in Geneva.
Dr. Malonga, there's no question that the three of you were pretty much really on the same page. But let's go back to this idea of yours where one's doctor has to begin with oneself. Why do we have, for example, ministries of health in all these countries that were affected. What is the role, really, of those ministers and senior government officials, including some of the most qualified and trained doctors on the ground?
On paper, you will read that their role is to protect the welfare and to promote the well-being of their citizens. This is what you can read on paper. But in reality, they don't do. So this is why I'm a little bit not very happy with the way they've been fighting the disease. And on top of that, we should remember that the West Africa outbreak is number 26 of all the outbreaks. It's not the first time that we are dealing with Ebola. This is the 26th time, and we have accumulated lessons from the start, from 1976. And we all know what works for the control of Ebola. And all the previous 25 outbreaks lasted not more than a month, not more than 4 weeks. And if you take the total number of people who have died from Ebola from 1976 till 2013, it's less than 1,000. So it's a shame. It's something that is very difficult to understand.
Very interesting. Now, Linda, you arrive on the ground in Liberia. You find an incredible situation. Any particular reason, frankly, as your colleague says, why the lessons from, for example, your country, the Democratic Republic of the Congo, the epicenter, in fact, of the birth of Ebola, any particular reason why those lessons were not learned or ignored?
I think that's a very good question. You have to realize that this was the first time you have an outbreak, an Ebola outbreak in West Africa. It's a very new disease to healthcare providers, to the ministries of health in West Africa. In addition, you have a lot of fear and rumors that were being generated as a result of so many people dying. And it was very difficult to implement these public health interventions, such as isolation, contact tracing, safe and dignified burials. It took a long time for communities to actually accept these interventions because they were scared. They were saying Ebola was something that was created by, you know, the West, by the government to kill them.
Really?
And so you had to
They even go to the extent of blaming the government?
Absolutely.
That it could, in fact, be thinking or intending to kill them?
Absolutely.
So
absolutely.
What does that say to us about people, the relationship between people on the ground and their governments, really?
There wasn't a lot of trust. For one, I think between communities and government. So there had to be a lot of social mobilization efforts to actually try to improve trust on behalf of the community towards the government, but also towards responders, whether it's international or national responders. So you saw this integration of social mobilization efforts with public health interventions that was extremely necessary. I think once communities became aware that this disease existed, and they had to put into place measures such as they had to seek care early, they had to access care early, I think there was a shift in all three countries. But it was a challenge. It was extremely challenging to do this.
Very interesting. What about you, Dr. Jiha?
So I want to talk about this idea of trust. I think the notion of trust is very, very important. We have seen in many outbreaks in other places that when people do not trust their government, when they don't trust their health system, they are much less likely to use it. They are only likely to go when they are in desperate straits at the sort of near the end of life. And then when they go, of course, a large proportion of those people end up dying, reinforcing the idea that these Ebola treatment units are killing people, when in fact, what we needed to do was turn that around. I think there has to be a very careful examination of why was there so little trust, and how do we prevent that for the next time. And building trust is not an overnight event. You can try to do short-term things, the social mobilization, the connection to public health, but long-term you need a strategy where the government and the health system provides high-quality care to people, because that's the only way you're going to build trust.
Unfortunately, time happens not to be our best ally. We'll come back to that point later. Now we'll pause for a short break. And would like to remind you that Straight Talk Africa is now on the social networking website Twitter. And we are tweeting live. Follow us at VOA Shaka. That's VOA Shaka. And join in on today's discussion with your questions and comments. Don't forget to use the hashtag VOA Ebola Free or Ebola Free. And we are still on Facebook. Just enter the keyword Straight Talk Africa. Become a fan and connect with other friends of the Voice of America. We'll be right back with you, so please don't go away.
An independent panel organized by the Harvard Global Health Institute and the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine released a report in The Lancet on November 23rd, analyzing the global response to the Ebola epidemic and identifying steps for reform. Here are some of the 10 recommendations of the report to serve as a roadmap to strengthen the global system for outbreak prevention and response. Number one, develop a global strategy to invest in, monitor, and sustain national core capacities. Number two, strengthen incentives for early reporting of outbreaks and science-based justifications for trade and travel restrictions. Number three, create a unified WHO center with clear responsibility, adequate capacity, and strong lines of accountability for outbreak response. Number four, broaden responsibility for emergency declarations to a transparent and politically protected standing emergency committee. Number five, institutionalize accountability through an independent commission for disease outbreak prevention and response.
I wanted to present music and a side of American culture that is most important to me, that is a part of who I am. They're going to get some incredible performances. That's one of the things I love, bringing these artists in so you can get to see them do what they do. It's soul music, and that's what music is. It's that which comes from the soul.
This is Straight Talk Africa on the Voice of America. What is your opinion about today's topic? Call us at 202-619-3111. U.S. country code 1. When you call, remember the following. Ask only one question. Keep your comment brief and turn down the volume on your radio or television. Now let's return to Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Esther Githu-Ewart. And of course, this is Straight Talk Africa, coming to you live from Washington. Let me come back to you, Doc. You heard your fellow doctors talk about the issue of lack of trust, the relationship really between the ordinary people in those countries that were affected by Ebola and the people that either govern them or rule them. Do you agree with them? And if you do, why do you think there seems to be a disconnect? Because after all, we talked earlier, you do have ministries of health in all these countries that we are talking about. And you could say that to pretty much across the African continent. You do have these people who look very well. They put on tie suits. They drive huge automobiles and what have you. But they don't even provide the basics in terms of civic education. And yet, they claim, and they are probably right, that in fact they have been elected through what they call periodic elections. But there's no accountability here.
There is no accountability. That's the fact. We can play games, but that's the fact. That's the reality throughout Africa. Our elected people are not accountable to the people.
Are they in fact elected or selected? No,
they are selected, and then they become elected by some means. But what we did in 1976, we knew that. We knew that these people in Yambuku, they didn't trust us coming from Kinshasa. So what we did to convince them, we passed through the people they trust. And those people they trust were the Belgian nuns and the Belgian priest, and the people were working with them. They have been working with them for years. So we passed through them. We were not in contact, direct contact with the people. So all our messages were forwarded to the communities by the nuns. So because the nuns, they spoke the language, the local language.
Right.
They're coming, speaking French or Lingala, because Lingala is not the local language. Mm-hmm. So this is how you, if you want to have trust, you have to connect through people who have the trust of the population. Now, but if you are coming from outside, you are a Westerner, you are an American, for instance, and you are coming in a remote village and accompanied by those people from the central ministry, what do you expect from those people?
Very interesting. Linda, are you surprised by the manner in which, for example, Pope Francis mm-hmm. was received in Africa in the last 6 days, a three-nation tour, really? Do you see how people, frankly, they rushed to him, how they welcomed him, frankly, with their hearts? And we're talking about from the grassroots level to the top. Mm-hmm. Why can't we see our leaders having that sort of relationship with their own people who they claim to lead?
I admire Pope Francis, for one, and I'm not surprised with the reaction in these three African countries he visited, because I think he's definitely a man of the people. He spends time with the least of thee and spends time serving the poor. I think we need more trusted leaders that spend time with the poor, serving the poor. I think with this response, we learned that it's important to integrate community leaders, religious leaders, in the response. In Guinea, in Liberia, what I saw was imams and priests, pastors, engaging the community, teaching people about Ebola, encouraging them to seek care. I think that's very important. I think it's important that our political leaders in Africa do the same, that they go to the people and serve them in order to actually increase trust. And I can also say the same of healthcare workers. Mm-hmm. I think providing quality services is important, but also in order to increase trust, you have to make sure that your community trusts the people that are serving them, including mm-hmm. healthcare workers and the health system.
Now, Ashish, not that I'm really trying to make this political, but given that when you look at the effective response in those three West African countries, the response, frankly, seemed to have come from Western nations, pretty much, correct?
No.
And some other countries, but largely from outside, okay?
Well, I would say, actually, there was a lot of heroic people, nurses and doctors, who were from the three affected countries.
Very true.
Who did unbelievable work given the circumstances they had. So now there is no doubt there were external organizations, MSF, Doctors Without Borders. They played a critical role. There were other non-governmental organizations. I think fundamentally the problem was that these doctors, nurses, community health workers who were West Africans mm-hmm. were working in a system mm-hmm. that did not support them,
right.
that did not give them the basic tools that they needed.
No logistics.
The logistics, the lack of... I was speaking to a county health officer from Liberia who described how she got her whole team together, taught them how to protect themselves when taking care of Ebola patients. And then she went to the closet where she was supposed to have all the protective equipment and found there were no gloves. Well, what can you do if you don't have any gloves?
Right, right.
And so faced with those circumstances, I would not agree that the effective responses only came from outsiders. I think there were tremendous people doing what they could. The problem was they were working in a system that did not allow them to do a good job. Good of a job as they wanted.
You are right. And, of course, you do have examples of many American healthcare workers, in fact, who were affected by the disease. I remember having a town hall meeting here in which, of course, you were included. Given, frankly, that the Western world or the development partners, as they are called on the African continent, seem to have a lot of that power. And, in fact, it has been said that a lot of elections on the African continent are not really organized for or to serve the interests of the primary stakeholder, the ordinary African man, woman, child. They are in fact organized to appease their development partners so that they can continue receiving aid. Given that they have that kind of power, why can't they bring about the pressure to bear, really, to make sure that you have systems in place? Because you're talking about countries where people on a daily basis get sick, they have no access to drugs, even the basic of it, and yet government officials have huge amounts of dollars, taxpayers' dollars, which they use to go for treatment or medical checkup in Europe, North America, South Africa, in India.
Yeah, you know, so this is issues around political governance, not my area of expertise. I will say two things that I think are important. One is that I think the common person on the street, the regular person on the street, is smarter than we think. When they don't trust their government, when they don't trust their health system, there's usually a good reason. We like to say, oh, it's about superstition, maybe they don't understand. No, no, no. I actually think they're a lot smarter than that. There's usually a good reason. And I think problems of governance, of political leaders not looking out for the best interests of the citizens is a global one. It's not just an African one. Mm-hmm. But I completely agree that until we make real progress on that, it's going to be hard to fix a lot of other issues.
Very interesting. You want to add something?
No, no,
the issue of accountability, my friend.
The issue of accountability, that is the core of the problem. Unless we solve that, we address that problem, we are going to have other Ebola crisis. Next time it's not going to be Ebola, because the nature can find ways of inventing other diseases that we are going to call emerging diseases. But at least we should learn from these crises something. And one of the things I think we have learned is that the need to build systems that the common people trust.
And you know, Linda, the irony in all this is that when senior government officials from Africa go for medical treatment, whether it is North America or Europe, India, in fact, to a certain degree, or South Africa, guess who they meet there? Doctors from their own countries actually provide treatment to them. Can you imagine?
Which is why I think it's very important to build local capacity, build capacity within the health systems that exist to actually provide quality services. We lost more than 300 healthcare workers during this outbreak. In countries that had a very low number of physicians per 100,000 population. And, you know, realizing that we need to invest in our health systems to actually ensure that Africa is producing quality physicians, quality nurses, quality healthcare workers to respond to the next outbreak.
Mm-hmm. In fact, I remember Ambassador Stevens from Sierra Leone on the panel admitting that when they got that Ebola outbreak in Sierra Leone, guess where they found most of their doctors? Right here in the United States of America. Interesting. You're tuned into Straight Talk Africa, and we'll have more of a discussion in a moment. But first, here is Mariama Jero. Take it away, Mariama.
Well, thanks, Shaka. Still to come, we'll reveal some of the outstanding feedback we've received from our audience through social media. But now, here is our letter of the week from a Straight Talk Africa Facebook fan who responded to our question of the week. Mohamed Ahmed Mansour in Monrovia, Liberia, writes, "The international reaction to the Ebola outbreak was slow and inadequate. I think it's time for the world to uphold its health systems and improve safety. The global health system should initiate consistent health reform policies to enable African governments to fight the deadly Ebola virus. And it should also promote community awareness and sensitization programs in Africa. The training of health workers, nurses, and doctors is of paramount importance in the fight against the deadly virus."
Like Voice of America on Facebook. Follow VOA on Twitter. Twitter. Join VOA on our YouTube channel. Like, follow, join VOA.
This is Straight Talk Africa on the Voice of America. Call us now with your questions and comments. The number 202-619-3111. And the U.S. country code is 1. Call us collect and we'll pay for the call. Or call direct and we'll call you right back. Remember to keep your questions brief. Now back to Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Esther Githui-Ewart. And of course, welcome back to Straight Talk Africa, live from Washington. Once again, it's time to bring in my colleague and social media reporter, Mariama. Take it away again, Mariama.
Well, thanks, Shaka. The Harvard Global Health Institute and the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine say that the slow response to the Ebola epidemic cost thousands of lives. The report also says that the biggest single failure was that the World Health Organization's delay in sounding the alarm on the outbreak. Well, this leads us to our question of the week, asking, what kind of reforms do you think the global health system needs to help African governments recover from the Ebola epidemic? Well, thanks, everyone, for using all our social media platform to communicate to us. And another reminder that we are tweeting live today. Just use the hashtag VOA Ebola Free or hashtag Ebola Free. And speaking of it, let's go to a tweet from Rodney Tuhami of Makerere University in Kampala, who proposes the solution to elaborate healthcare systems and create a center for disease control. Another tweet, this time from Gama Thabani of South Africa, says, connection of the traditional medicine and sciences and also faith will heal the world of all sicknesses. That's very interesting. Let's now move on to a Facebook comment from Pius Kwegondeza, who is originally from Uganda but currently lives in Edgartown, that's in Massachusetts. He says, communities should always remain alert, not just for terrorism and politics, but also concerns that impact our health. Well, Shaka and guests, your take on these comments.
Interesting. Your reaction, Dr. Jiha.
So I think there were several very important comments there about certainly the role of communities. Communities, local health systems are always the first line of defense. And so I found several of those comments, I think, to be very helpful. And I agree with the notion that we need a global health system. You know, we are supposed to have one. That was the purpose behind the WHO. It is the purpose behind the entire UN framework. That health system did not work as it was supposed to. And so I think we need a very careful examination, both of what went wrong. There were some things that actually went right. And understanding what went wrong, what went right, and then ultimately putting in plans to make it better.
Thank you. Mariama, do you have any more feedback to share with us, please?
Well, absolutely. We'll move on to a posting from Uguba Bubuzi from Port Harcourt in Nigeria, who writes, the kind of reform they need is to enhance the use of technology to detect the Ebola virus and a drug that can kill the deadly disease. I think there have been several, actually, vaccines trials and all that stuff. But let's take a look at another Facebook comment. This time comes from a Tanzanian. His name is Frank Makongua, who lives in Iriga City in the Philippines. Well, hello to you there and hello to all the Africans there. Let's read your comment now. He says they need to provide education for the causes and symptoms of Ebola and how to avoid it, and drugs should be provided. Once again, Shaq and Guess, your take on that.
Hey, Doc, your reaction.
I think we can only agree with the comments that we have a problem. And the first line of defense is communities, but these communities need to be supported back up by national governments and international framework that we have created with, and we call WHO. So the whole system should work in harmony so that we can prevent what happened next time, what happened in West Africa. And as I said, it's going to be not necessarily Ebola. It's going to be maybe another virus. But
right.
The same strategy will work for any disease that can emerge tomorrow. So if we have communities that are well-educated, ready to defend themselves, and these communities are supported by government and the international communities, then we are okay.
So would it be perhaps accurate to say that what we really need are governments, frankly, who serve the fundamental interests of the people? So we're talking about democracy here, a government of the people, by the people, and for the people.
Exactly. We need elected people who behave themselves that as they are accountable to the people.
We need servant leaders, really. Well, thanks, Mariama, for bringing us this week's audience reaction.
Well, thanks to you, Shaka, and thanks to all our guests. That will do it for today's social media segment. Just a reminder that we appreciate all the feedback, whether it's in social media form or using other means to communicate to us. Please keep them coming. If you are a new fan, just drop us a line at africatv@voanews.com. Once again, our email address is africatv@voanews.com. Or post your comment on our Facebook page. Just enter the keywords Straight Talk Africa. Be sure to visit us online at voaafrica.com, or you can join our YouTube channel. Sign up to VOA TV to Africa, and don't forget to follow us on Twitter at VOA Shaka. A reminder that the show is streaming live every Wednesday. Go to our VOA Straight Talk Africa TV program page on our website, or simply watch us live on your mobile device. Just download the VOA mobile app. Now, let's take a look at what's on tap for next week's program.
Next week on Straight Talk Africa, democracy wins with a smooth transition of power in Burkina Faso. President-elect Roch Marc Christian Kabore soundly defeated the opposition in the first free and competitive vote there since independence. Join in the discussion on the West African nation's future under the new leadership of Kabore. That's next week, right here on Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Esther Githui Ewart, and welcome back. Today we are talking about efforts by Africans and the global community to rebuild West African countries affected by the Ebola virus. Our distinguished guests are Dr. Malonga Miatudila, a public health specialist who was part of an international team that first identified the Ebola virus, Dr. Linda Mobula, assistant professor in the Division of General Internal Medicine at the Johns Hopkins School of Medicine, and a volunteer medical officer for Samaritan's Pass, a faith-based relief organization. And last but not least, Dr. Ashish Jiha, associate professor of health policy and management at the Harvard School of Public Health. Well, I have to say, well, doctors, I am profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host you on Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You're most welcome. Very interesting discussions, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
Now, we were talking about the issue of accountability. How do you expect most of these governments on the continent, frankly, which have not come to power fairly, really, through what we have come to know as one man or one person vote. How do you expect them to sincerely account to their people? Isn't this why perhaps there is a disconnect? And can't we, for example, appeal to the international community, which seems to exercise a lot of power? When you compare and contrast the kind of power that the ordinary primary stakeholder, for example, in the Democratic Republic of the Congo has, can't they, in fact, try and make a difference for the vast majority of the people by saying, you know what, You have to be an elected official by your people in order to reflect their interests. Agree with that?
Absolutely. I think the international community should exert more pressure to ensure that these leaders are more accountable with their funding and all these investments that are being made. I think there should be a requirement for a results-based system. You need to produce results in order for funding to actually occur. I think by creating a system where there's more accountability, I think you're definitely increasing pressure and ensuring that these leaders are actually going to produce more results.
When you arrived on the ground, I believe it was Monrovia, correct?
Correct.
What was your immediate impression? I mean, when you looked at the facilities, for example, the logistics, what came through your mind? You're coming from America, Johns Hopkins.
You know, we experienced many, many challenges, including the lack of supplies, fear, lack of knowledge regarding Ebola, lack of knowledge regarding case management. How do you detect the disease? How do you ensure that healthcare providers are protected? My colleague talked about the lack of gloves, lack of personal protective equipment. So supply chain management is an issue. Infection control is an issue. You're dealing with knowledge regarding case management. Mm. All of those combined made it extremely challenging to set up systems to actually respond. You need very robust surveillance at the community level, at the health facility level. Health facilities need to report these cases to the central government, to ministries of health. And so, you know, little by little, I think there's been a lot of improvement. I think, you know, generally we're saying that there have been 11,000 deaths. Mm. But I have to say that there has been a lot of infrastructure that has been built.
Right.
Healthcare workers have been trained. Ebola treatment units have been built. There has been improvement in terms of supply chain. There's been strengthening of health systems. I think we need to continue with these efforts to establish stronger rapid response mechanisms. I think, yes, it's been a tragedy. 11,000 people have died. But at the same time, there have been a lot of investments made. There has been a lot of progress that has been made since December of 2013, when the first case occurred in Guinea.
Mm. Now, Dr. Jiha, I don't know whether I am muttering your name. Correct me if I am.
No, it's fine. It's close.
You're most welcome. When you hear the World Health Organization, you know, celebrating and saying, you know what? We did it. We done it. And then suddenly you have other new cases. People are still suffering or infected with the same disease, and you have three dying in Liberia. What immediately comes to your mind here?
Right. So there are two issues that come to my mind. One is that the world needs an effective, trustworthy World Health Organization. You know, on our panel, we had a very robust discussion about could WHO be reformed.
Mm-hmm.
And the recurring theme that all of us said was that if WHO were to go away tomorrow, we would need to create a new one.
Mm-hmm.
We need an effective WHO. So, and that an effective WHO has many principles, but one of them is that it has to work very closely with countries, and it has to be held accountable. And so if there are still cases of Ebola breaking out in Monrovia or in Freetown, we need a WHO that owns up to it, takes responsibility for it, works closely with the individual governments to address it. I think WHO itself has come under a lot of pressure even before our report came out. WHO has started taking some steps, so not only have there been improvements in the countries, I actually think there have been some improvements at WHO in trying to reform and get better. I think the message here is it's a start. It's not nearly enough. We need to do a lot more. We should be hearkened by and relieved by the fact that there is some progress, but this is not the time to let up. This is not the time to get comfortable and say we have solved this problem. Far from it. We have a long way to go.
It's not yet. Alleluia. A reminder that you are tuned in to Straight Talk Africa. If you wish to participate in our discussion, please call us at 202-619-3111. U.S. country code is 1. We'll continue our discussion in a moment, so please Don't go away.
Here are more recommendations of the Harvard Global Health Institute and London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine Lancet report to serve as a roadmap to strengthen the global system for outbreak prevention and response. Number 6 is to develop a framework of rules to enable, govern, and ensure access to the benefits of research. Number 7, establish a global facility to finance, accelerate, and prioritize research and development. Number 8, sustain high-level political attention through a global health committee of the Security Council. Number 9, a new deal for a more focused and appropriately financed WHO. Finally, number 10, good governance of the World Health Organization through decisive, time-bound reform and assertive leadership.
We are able to touch on things that are important to people on an everyday basis. We hope that our viewers are getting inspired when they watch our show. They're getting a view of the world from a different perspective, things that perhaps are not in their immediate vicinity. Today, I could put in on the show something that is a little different, a little unique, and this gives me that inspiration to come to work.
If you like today's show, please write and tell us what you think or give us some suggestions. Be sure to tell us what station you're tuned into. Our address, Straight Talk Africa, Voice of America, 330 Independence Avenue Southwest, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. Or send us an email at africatv@voanews.com. Log on to our website at voaafrica.com. Or post your comments on Facebook, keywords Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Esther Githui Ewart. And of course, this is Straight Talk Africa coming to you live from Washington. Let's go to the lifeline of the show, which are the telephone callers. Good evening, Felix from South Sudan. You're most welcome to Straight Talk Africa.
Good evening, Shaka. My name is Felix. I'm calling from South Sudan.
I am hugely terrific. Habari gani?
Salama.
Asante. Maswari yako?
Yes. I with the Ebola response, I was in Sierra Leone for the Ebola response, working for the UN. But the problem of the Ebola response was that African governments, they don't put much on the budget of health. That's the biggest challenge that we Africa and the budget of health. And the second issue was like when we're in West Africa, all the colonies, former colonies, were divided among themselves. So it's also a biggest challenge, and WHO needs to reform in terms of combating such diseases.
Any question? Thank you. Thank you very much. Let's go to the other side, of course, of the continent. Good evening, Patrick from Nigeria. You're most welcome to Straight Talk Africa.
Good evening, Mr. Shaka. Good evening, our guest. My name is Patrick Okorafo in Arutuku, Nigeria. My question to our guest is this. There is a report here that the man's reproductive system, the semen, who have suffered the Ebola, that after 6 months, that the Ebola is still there in the man's semen, that the man is not supposed to have sexual intercourse with any woman, that he happened to do that, he will transfer the Ebola bacteria to the woman. So I don't know how truthful is this, that very statement. And secondly, I think there is need for African leaders to sanitize the Africans, the people within them, their domain, because if you see around, we have agreed that Ebola has gone that is back, but nobody is still sure in future. Thank you very much.
You're most welcome. Would you like to weigh into that?
Sure.
Go for it.
I'll answer the first question. There's been evidence that Ebola virus persists in semen up to 9 months.
Mm-hmm.
There was a recent article that was published in the New England Journal of Medicine. A study was done in Sierra Leone where they evaluated, did a semen analysis on 100 men, and they found that Ebola persists up until 9 months. Hmm. And this is concerning because there has been evidence of sexual transmission, meaning that you can have reemergence of a cluster after you reach zero, which means it's really important to actually implement public health interventions where you're actually doing semen analysis and you're actually tracking these male survivors and ensuring that they're protecting themselves. Because I think it's important to know, first of all, if as a survivor, do you have Ebola in your semen? And if yes, you need to protect yourself. Because otherwise, even though the risk of transmission is very low, it's a rare event, it still happens. So this is something that we need to be mindful of as we're moving forward and looking forward and actually developing strategies and interventions to prevent another outbreak.
Has it actually been scientifically proven that is true?
Yes, it has been scientifically proven that it is true.
So can you imagine, for example, what may perhaps have happened or not happened, especially in your own country, where the Ebola actually was first identified back in 1976?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 1976. So after the end of the crisis in November, we didn't have new cases of Ebola after that. Despite the fact that 15% of people did survive. Okay, we had a false alarm in around March 76, 77. We went there. There were no cases. And again, as I've said before, when West Africa was hit by Ebola last year. DRC also had the same problem. So we had the crisis in the Equator region. But again, that outbreak was controlled within 3 weeks, as usual. Right. That was the seventh outbreak.
Why is it that in that particular area, 3 weeks is fine? But for West Africa, we're talking about nearly two years.
This is where I was going to come. So maybe the behavior that we are seeing now in West Africa is something new, because we have never had that issue in the first 25 outbreaks. So maybe by allowing Ebola virus to stay in the community for more than a year. Also, Ebola has now devised new means to adapt to the situation. So now maybe now we are dealing with a revised virus that is going to stay in the body of people. And now we are going to have sexually transmitted Ebola.
Interesting.
So because of our negligence, we have created a new strain.
Could it in fact be?
This is my fear. In the previous outbreaks, even in Uganda, what we have found is that somebody survives from Ebola, he gets some antibodies that protects him from the disease. So Ebola used to be a disease that either you die or you survive. When you survive, it's over. But now it looks like we are dealing with a new strain of Ebola.
Very interesting. Dr. Jiha, you want to say something?
Yeah, I do. I don't know if we're seeing a new strain. I think what we're seeing is numbers that we have never seen before. So in these previous outbreaks in Uganda, in the DRC, you had dozens of cases, maybe 100 cases. You never had 28,000 cases. Mm-hmm. And so we now have thousands of survivors. And what we're learning, and it's still learning, meaning in 6 months, this might turn out that we have new information. But as of today, my best understanding is, look, if you survive the disease, most of those people are immune for the rest of their lives. But for a small percentage of people, they continue to keep and harbor the virus. For men, it's in their semen. In some people, it goes into their brain fluid, into their cerebral spinal fluid. And so 1-2% of people can have recurrences. We've started seeing that. Now, if you had 20 survivors and a 2% recurrence, you may not see it in anybody. But if you have 2,000 survivors, mm. now you're seeing dozens of cases of these recurrences. Mm. So I think the biggest thing that has happened is we are learning a lot more about Ebola because we have had so many people affected and we've never had that before. This is obviously not a good thing in the sense that we don't want so many people infected and the fact that it has. But it gives us an opportunity to understand this virus better. And it says to us that all the people who have survived, we need to continue taking care of them, watching them, and making sure that if they're that 1 or 2% that has a recurrence of some kind, that we get on it and we take care of it. The disease is not over yet.
Let me ask you a question that reflects a bit about my ignorance regarding my guests. Do you by any chance come from India?
I do come from India.
Very good. I got that one. Is it possible that there could in fact be a correlation between democracy and effective or decent health care services? Because look at India. Look at India. I mean, since 1947, you regained your political independence, never had a military coup, unlike your neighbors in Pakistan and what have you. And look, when people get sick today, where is the medical mecca? India.
So, again, I'm not a political scientist. I will tell you that India has many healthcare delivery systems that are quite good. India also has massive challenges on issues of trust, on issues of accountability. So, yes, they may have a democracy. Yes, they have political leaders that you can hold accountable and vote out. But unfortunately, my feeling is democracy is necessary, but it is not sufficient. You still need a focus on an accountable, high-quality health system. And the public health system of India, again, has made progress, but it's not nearly as good as it needs to be.
It's very interesting that you begin to sound like a student of political science, because I used to be a political science major myself. Final question, in 30 seconds, how representative was your panel?
Representative.
Did you incorporate some scientists from the countries that you are?
Yeah. So we decided we wanted a broad range of perspectives. We had two panel members from West Africa. We had panel members from Mexico, Hong Kong, Europe, the U.S., Canada. It was a very broad group. We wanted people who ultimately represented civil society, so we didn't have any members of WHO or governments. We had academics, we had think tanks, we had NGOs, we had people from MSF. Could we have been more representative? Sure. But we wanted to make sure that we had people who had on-the-ground experience, who had lived through the disease, but also people who were experts on this. And I think that the group was pretty representative, but you know, you can always do better on these things.
And at the end of the day, you are at least comfortable with the results, the conclusions that you reached.
We are. We do not think that we have come up with all the right answers, but we think we have pointed to the fact that you need reform at all levels. You need to help countries get better. You need regional offices get better. You need a more effective WHO.
Thank you so much. On that note, thanks to our distinguished guests, Dr. Malonga Miatudila, a public health specialist who was part of an international team that first identified the Ebola virus, Dr. Linda Mobula, assistant professor in the Division of General Internal Medicine at Johns Hopkins School of Medicine and a volunteer medical officer for Samaritan's Purse. And last but not least, Dr. Ashish Jiha, associate professor of health policy and management at the Harvard School of Public Health. Thanks to our affiliate stations, along with our viewers and listeners, we thank you for tuning in. For many of our Voice of America radio affiliates, Learning English is coming up next. And tomorrow morning, it's Daybreak Africa with James Bate. On behalf of the Voice of America, thanks for tuning into Straight Talk Africa. In the meantime, get better, not bitter, Africa. And please remember to keep the African hopes alive.